It won't be because of vaccinations and them building jails and prisons for your physical body.
Yeah. And aren't all of those things, when you really get down to it, then when you actually can realize or understand that there are more psychological aspects behind all of this, all of these things are perfect even for the world order as it is now. It's perfect to occupy people with focusing on external things all the time, that actually, you know, for example, let's take the chemtrails issue or whatever, you know, that actually it's like a big psyops in a way, that actually, okay, we you know, release some new stuff or you know, do something weird, you know, so all the conspiratorial minded people can actually have something to focus on or something to talk about or be busy with, basically.
Exactly. I mean, they may do enough to give you some sort of physical fact that it does exist.
Of course,
they know that will now create the right effect.
Yeah.
This has been said. The top Masonic, you know, people are familiar with my work. We have quotes from them telling they're going to do this.
Mm.
That they put out a certain stimuli and everybody responds in kind.
Mm.
See, and it goes deep to this thing, which is what the heart of your question is, which is, look, why are we looking to, you know, physical chains, physical prisons, physical surveillance, physical drugs, dumbing down techniques,
mm-hmm.
when they have already worked on a man so psychically that he's so insecure and he's so slave-like in his consciousness? What on earth do they need to go to the physical thing for, to put the gun to the head?
Yeah.
David Icke calls it the sheepdog, you know, the whistle and the sheep.
Yeah.
And he's right. Man is already so policed. Man is already so policing himself.
Mm.
Man is already so under Orwellian control, you know, he's so estranged from his own drives, he's so removed from his own body processes, he's already so addicted, he's already so medicated. Tell me what on earth, you know, they need to go to this other length, you see, with tanks and guns and all sort of the other things that they need.
Yeah.
It's always a war on consciousness.
Mm.
They might try that, but they have tried it in the past.
Yeah.
I mean, we're coming from dynasties that are infinitely more oppressive than what we know today.
Yeah.
We've already come through the Habsburgs, you know, the Hanoverans, and the time of the, you know, the great dynasties, which basically had people on a serfdom. You know, we've already, that doesn't work. They found out that has certain limitations. So it's been a psychic dictatorship that's taken place. It's going to be smiling depressives.
Mm.
You're going to be in a happy nightmare.
Mm. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You're going to love your chains. You're going to feel bad without it. You know how they say they let some prisoners go and they're dying to get back inside because they feel so, you know?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
They go, I wish I was back in jail. Or this is driving me crazy, this reality.
Yeah.
Man is afraid of reality. Man is not live. He's not vital. He's morbid. He's toxic. He doesn't have a clue about how to, you know, detoxify himself, because the religions have been giving you light, 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 acquire, 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 reward, reward, reward. Of course you're going to become an economic slave. Of course you're not going to heed the Lord's Prayer. Of course you're going to live in excess when you believe that you're already so worthless that you have to work for a reward from somebody else.
Mm.
So you have to have a big economic system and you have to have a big boss to give you the rewards. People are not going to work, Henrik, just to earn daily bread.
Hmm.
They're going to work for many more psychological reasons than that.
Yeah.
For the pat on the back, and it doesn't even have to be a physical one. It's the psychological idea, I work for the corporation.
Mm.
Praise the company.
Hmm. Even for the small intrigues, maybe, even for the infighting, for the, you know, troubles at work or whatever.
You solved the problem.
Hmm.
We profited this month. Sales are up.
Hmm.
You did good. You're the best salesperson we've got on the team. We're going to give you a new car. We're going to give you a raise. You're getting promoted. Do you know how incredible people are dependent on that rubbish?
Hmm.
It's not just because they need pay. It's because they're tied into the reward, the subtlety, you know, the idea of, I've made it, my boss loves me,
well,
I'm going to get promoted, I'm going to go through the glass ceiling, you know.
Appreciation, I mean, that's...
But see, you shouldn't be dependent on anything anybody else says, does, or thinks.
Mm.
If we want to, you know, like I said in the, we were talking in the Future of Mankind DVD, enlightenment is when you are no longer affected by anything another person does, says, or thinks.
Mm.
Does, what somebody else does? Tell me when it is that what another person does in your family has never affected you. You're thrown into complete disarray by what other people are doing around you. You have no center whatsoever.
Hmm.
You're totally embroiled in that person's life and them and yours. There's not an ounce or shred of individuality. That is exactly, then don't tell me, if that is your state, then do not tell me why beast is outside the door. Why leviathans exist outside your door. If you have no center, no self, and are completely divorced, living on the periphery of being, then you are a slave, and then the beast will use that weakness. The beast does not, cannot come, it's just like any virus. The virus cannot penetrate what?
The immune system.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It cannot happen. You know, you don't, you don't have to be a Zen Buddhist to know this. The idea is that if you are strong and healthy and your body politic is immune psychically, emotionally, nothing can come in. You know, it's like the whole Salem's Lot concept. You have to let it in.
The vampire.
Yeah. You've got to let it in. It's not doing anything to you. And we have let it in. And this is where my message is maybe different from others who are, you know, screaming blue murder at them. If we could only get rid of them. Michael Moore. If we can get rid of them, if we elect my guys. But wait a minute. Didn't the Second World War break out with your guys in power in America?
The Democrats.
And then the Republicans go, no, if we can only get them out and have our guys in, everything will be wonderful.
Sure.
But didn't the First World War break out when your guys were in? You know, so look, work it out, you know, connect some dots. It's all the same problem.
Yeah.
It's all based on the same psychology. It's all based on human beings having no center of themselves, not even knowing what their own needs are. So let me put it again very clearly. The same loss of self that drove Torquemada or Pina or any of these maniacs to go and put burning pins into somebody else's flesh is exactly the same loss of self that you see today when somebody is doing the same thing to a wife or to a husband, you see, to a child or to a workmate, to a family member, or to themselves. Sadism is, first of all, sadism to the self. From there it moves out and becomes sadism to others.
And it all about different level. We have this idea that it is only physical, you know, that but it's on so many levels, you know.
Because man is a psychologically arrested.
Yeah.
If you can take a Polaroid off it and you can call, you can blow your whistle and the physical police come charging in, then it's a crime.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
If you can be dragged into court, there's evidence. My God, that's not even the beginning of it. The creature who goes and becomes the guard at Abu Ghraib or anywhere else, and believe me, you know, there's plenty of American prisons where they're infinitely worse. That person who went and got that job, did anybody force them?
Probably not.
Did anybody force, you know, the people around Adolf Hitler to join up with him? People went and got those jobs out of choice.
Sure. Yeah.
Because that's what I'm talking about. In the hierarchy, if you lose yourself within the role in the uniform, you're nobody now. So that nobody has no conscience. And the conscienceless person who has no conscience can always say, well, it was them up the ladder. You see, and then they shift the blame all the way up. As we saw physically happening in the Pentagon crisis when they were trying to pass the buck to who was responsible for the Abu Ghraib atrocities. I mean, I knew right then nobody's ever going to... It's going to keep going round and round and round because nobody is a self. Nobody has the guts to say it's my responsibility.
What about... just came to think about that. I mean, we have the news reports, you know, of Bush saying that he actually receives, you know, instructions from God, you know.
Oh, well, of course he does. But don't you see he's right? That's the man's way of saying... I am doing what God wants. This is I'm glad you brought that up. That epitomizes what we're talking about. Reverend Moody, an American clergyman, literally said, I never reason on religion. None but the disciples of devils reason. It's dangerous to reason on religion. And guess what? He's right. It is dangerous to reason on religion. Goes back to the point we were making earlier on. Religion is irrational. It doesn't want you to reason. The last thing that it wants from you is selfhood or rational thought. It doesn't want you to be Captain Kirk going, excuse me, what would God need from a spaceship or starship? Yes. If God is God, and I believe there is such a force in the universe, it don't need nothing from you. It doesn't need anything from you. And when the when we have an understanding of what this means, you know, then we change. But have a from this... there's an incredible book that people should know about with Helen Ellerbe. You had a quote at the beginning of the show. She has a quote from Ignatius of Loyola. No doubt. People, of course, who followed the Jesuit question will know that he was the leader of the Jesuits. And one of the quotes that is, again, very interesting in the context of which we're talking about, his quote is, "I am mere dung. I must ask our Lord that when I am dead, my body be thrown on to the dung heap to be devoured by the birds and dogs."
Mm.
Okay. So if you join the Jesuit order and you, you know, are a practicing Jesuit, just know that the leader of your order was a self-sadist.
Hmm.
I don't know what that tells you, and you can happily continue as you are, but just know, as a simple fact, that that's what this man thought of his own being. That's what they call necrophiliac thinking. If you really know what the word necrophiliac means, and it doesn't mean what people think it means, it's a psychological term that means insane thinking, love of death, then you're dealing with necrotic people who will definitely want to subjugate others and have them conform into that herdic mentality. And will punish those people. Remember, it's an inquisition, isn't it? What is an inquisition? We're going to punish those people, and we're going to suppress those people. Inquisition, by the way, and look it up in the dictionary, under inquisition, and we'll put the link on the website. Inquisition was set up to suppress heretics. That's what it was for. They said it themselves.
Yeah.
In 1507 or whatever. You know what a heretic means? Those who choose.
Those who choose.
So we're talking about inquisitions old and new. Look around you today and find out, is there not persecution today of heretics? As I said, it's almost a comical joke that the heretic is the Islamic people who make up the bigger, even bigger than Christianity. Look how crazy this has become. But even leaving that aside, ordinary people now, especially in America, are being considered heretics to speak up.
Yeah.
Yet, doesn't it say in the Constitution, is it not a logical, rational, see, if we're talking reason, then the Constitution is rational because the Constitution said that you must give free speech to even those you despise.
Sure, sure. Yeah, just look at this, you know, mess with Rosie O'Donnell, you know, for speaking up about, you know, some questions about 9/11.
Yeah.
There's an inquisition for you, you know, going after her, you know.
They went after Imus. Yeah. Right before that,
that's right.
I mean, that might have been set up, but you know, let's leave that aside.
Again,
you know, he had the he had the right to say what he wanted to say without losing his job. That's a fact. That's what I'm talking about. We don't need to talk about Christianity or anything. There it is.
Yeah,
there it is. They made this. They're going to say to this man, "You're not self-made. We're going to take away your cup of tea. We're going to take away your livelihood because you have not said what is politically correct."
Yeah,
they're not going to address it.
Sure.
They're not going to say, is this a fact what he said or not? No. Fact and reason doesn't come into it. You have broken the protocol of the cult. So you're out. You know, there's a, it says John Calvin, which of course the famous early founder of Protestantism, "We are all made of mud," says John Calvin. "And this mud is not just on the hem of your gown or on the sole of your boots or on your shoes. We are full of it. We are nothing but mud and filth, both inside and outside." And there's Christians walking around today who believe that. Right? Then I ask a simple question. If you're muddy and filthy and degenerate, what on earth do you want God to have to put up with you for? You see, the whole thing is meaningless. If you're that, if you're already that toxic, how can you be capable of love? And why would you want to be absorbing yourself into God? Why would you want to be sullying God with your mess? So the whole logic breaks down. And Jonathan Edwards, a New England Calvinist preacher, he said, of children, I think it was, he was saying, or just in general to people, he said, "You are a little, wretched, despicable creature, a worm, a mere nothing, and less than nothing, a vile insect that has risen up in contempt against the majesty of heaven and earth." He went on to say, "The God that holds you over the pit of hell, much as we would hold a spider or some loathsome insect over the fire, abhors you." Which means hates you, despises you, and is dreadfully provoked. His wrath towards you burns like fire. And really want to really meditate on this, because here is a person that's literally saying that even the guy at the top of the pyramid, he's full of hate. He not only hates you, but he has hate. This ties into Jung talking about that maybe that Satan was the dark side of God's psyche.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah,
another whole thing a person could explore. You know, that Jehovah, and there's a relationship between Satan and Jehovah. That Jehovah could have a dark side. We have dark sides of our consciousness. Well, maybe if God is projection of human consciousness, could God not have a dark side? And could that dark side not be Lucifer or Satan? But the preacher here is saying, you see, that you are despised. There's no love involved in any of this, which is a perfect proof of what I'm talking about.
Hmm.
I'm merely analyzing this and saying that that's right. At least this guy is sort of in a way admitting it, that there is no love, no humanity, no empathy, nothing involved, because this necrotic, these people have murdered their inner psyche, their self. And if you're dealing with these people and putting them in charge of the world order, if you're putting them in the positions of power, then don't come around and tell me that nothing is changing or that things are getting worse.
Hmm.
Because, you know, the oily rag that you're trying to clean the window with is making the window dirty.
Mm. Yeah.
There's a same guy, Jonathan Edwards, the New England Calvinist preacher. He says, as innocent as children seem to us, now he's addressing children,
mm-hmm.
if they are out of Christ, which God knows what that means, if they're out of Christ, they are not so in God's sight, but are young vipers and are infinitely more hateful than vipers and are in a most miserable condition. So in other words, if you're not buying into their gig, because this obviously this Christ must be full of hate as well then, because if you're not in Christ, then there's something, you're already an abhorrent.
Mm.
You're an abhorrent.
Mm.
There's no Christ in you. You got to come to Christ. Christ is, remember the whole idea of displacing your own Godhead? Now, there's no self, so there's no self to be enlightened. You can't be enlightened in the same way that the Egyptian mystics, you see, the mysticism of old, was that you were the one who would become Osiris or the enlightened one.
Yeah,
you are the
yeah.
one to become radiant. And the way you're going to do it is by living truly, being highly moral in your own life and your own actions, and by going through a lot of rites of passage and facing what life throws at you. Now, you turn that all off. You don't worry about it because some other guy called Jesus, he's done it all for you.
Mm-hmm, yeah,
and by the way, you're loathsome, but it's up to him whether he's going to forgive you or not, or rather the church, remember, because we said it's an illusion to think that Christianity is of God.
Mm.
So this thing is born out of this absence of selfhood. There's no self to matriculate. There's no self to become enlightened. There's only a non-self.
Mm.
Which is the Eastern Nirvana concept, that you just merge back into the abyss.
Hmm.
Now, here's the most... and again, I'm a person who likes to point out the contradictions, because the Bible actually refutes these preachers. The Bible actually contains the gems of the truth.
There's so much in there. I mean, you can. It feels like you can always find a passage that actually contradicts
the other one.
You know,
but what grabs me is that Jesus himself said, "Know ye not yourselves what is right?"
Yeah.
Jesus in the gospel says, "Know ye not yourselves what is right?"
Mm.
How do they explain that? That now you need all these other people.
Mm.
If you know, in Romans 1:20, it says, "The invisible things of God." This is Paul. "The invisible things of God are clearly seen and understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead." He's saying by looking at the things that are made in nature, you'll learn all there is to know.
Mm.
Wait a minute. You don't need church, you don't need religion, because by a mere observation of that which is made, because it's been made by God, your creator, a true and unadulterated study of that is already religion.
Mm.
Right? Paul I think it's the epistles, he says, the Gentiles who have not the Bible, it might be the Acts, the book of Acts, the Gentiles who have not the Bible do by nature the things contained in the Bible. Now that is a heavy piece of information. They're already telling you that the Gentiles are the ones who don't have access. You see, they're the ones who have to be converted. But yet St. Paul is saying the Gentiles who have not the Bible are doing by nature the things contained in the Bible.
So you don't need the Bible.
You don't need it. You can have it or you don't have it. And that's what I've said about the Constitution. It's what I've said about any doctrine, Magna Carta. What good are those documents when man himself has lost his psychic sovereignty? If man has no inner republic, if he's lost his constitutional sovereignty, if he's violated himself psychically, then what good is some piece of paper? You can bullhorn it to death. You can scream it.
Yeah.
You can buy 101 bumper stickers for your car. Let's get back to the Constitution. It doesn't mean a thing unless you have Constitution within you. Constitutions of law and society are based on human contracts of moral and virtuous relationships between men. You know what is breaking down in our society today, Henrik? Is that virtue. That is why you see it breaking down on the social, slightly higher macrocosmic level. It's because it is breaking down, and that involves a lot of mind control and other things, but ultimately, again, it's breaking down because man has lost his center. It's in his consciousness that he's losing his virtue, his morality, his conscience. So all the documents in the world will never work. And more so, you're going to engender then the kind of individuals that we see in society who will come in with their hammer and chisel and chip away at these documents and say, we don't need them anymore. Mm. They'll do exactly what you've seen. Mm. They will eviscerate them, they will change them, they will modify them, they will rewrite them, they will re-script it, and they'll have you, they'll roll over your rights, they'll turn the whole system upside down, and people will accept it. Mm-hmm. They may verbally, you know, it's cheap and easy to sit at the coffee shop going, what a terrible world we're living in. Mm. If those people themselves, you see, have lost their inner constitution. Mm. One of the most important things that happened back in the time of 1075 AD, Pope Gregory the VII began instigating what came to be known as the Gregorian reforms. Mm-hmm. By way of his reforms, Gregory sought to permanently secure the sovereign power of the church. Okay, so this church, what we know as the church, got really much more cemented and strong in 1075. He strictly enforced celibacy amongst the bishops and priests. He prohibited marriage for all ordained churchmen. And he saw to it that the Pope would hitherto be free and above the law, as was the church itself. So you see, remember, now they're removing themselves from the power. Don't we see that today?
Mm-hmm.
That they're removing themselves from the legal, you know, constraints?
Mm-hmm.
Gregory wished to create his own new world order in which the Pope was the supreme ruler over all men and over all kings.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, as another shows we've gone into, the Black Pope, the Pope, or let's be more specific, the Black Pope is the supreme ruler of the world.
Mm.
We're living under a system of this. And the people who have bought into this, you know, John Chrysostom, one of the great Christians, you know, meant to be this great saint, he said, the slave, now check this out, the slave should be resigned to his lot. In obeying his master, he is obeying God. So right from 1075 onwards, they're telling you that you must be obedient. And by obeying your master, that's any secular master, your lord, your baron, you see, the king, the remember, they're giving you political. They're saying by obeying any master that you have, you're obeying God.
Mm.
Look how well this works with politics.
Mm. Yeah.
A 17th century preacher said, if there are people who abuse the authority of sovereigns and charge you unfair taxes, God allows this in order to enact his justice, to punish your sins and the ill use you make of your property. So in other words, if you're oppressed by some worldly demagogue, it's okay because you're such a damn sinner that God is permitting it. He's not permitting you to be free to fight back. This is another, you know, you should just be happy with what you've got. And that the lord or of the manor, the baron, the king, is doing right.
Yeah.
So when you see these potentates, Blair and Bush and all of these people getting up saying, we are going to hammer you for your... They're basically, you're the sinners.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming from that mindset.
Sure.
They don't mind depriving you of your jobs. They don't mind outsourcing your jobs. They don't mind, you know, oppressing you and surveilling you. And you allow it because somewhere in the deepest part of your psyche, you do think you're a sinner. Mm-hmm. You have been programmed to believe this. You know, Nietzsche said something fantastic. The Christian resolve to find the world ugly and bad has made it ugly and bad.
Yeah, there you go.
So the burning of libraries, you know, the conscious dumbing down.
The destroying of knowledge.
The destroying of knowledge.
Yeah.
Is a very key part of this. The as I said there, that Gregory was adamant that people should think of, you know, his idea of celibacy and then prohibiting marriage for churchmen, is the working, which has been very well done, is to suppress man's sexuality.
All
of his drives, actually.
Mm.
But to work on sexuality, to make that demonized. And, of course, if you do that, then you have control over that person.
Mm.
Because now they'll, you know, subliminally be identifying with the other. You have subliminal control over their libido. You'll have them suppressed. This is a very important... It creates gender dichotomy.
That's a huge aspect of controlling people by, you know, suppression of sexuality.
Oh, yeah. Just that alone, you know, and many books have been written, of course, this is alone a massive subject.
Yeah.
and even why the churches are designed that way, why the bishops wear the flowing robes of the female. See, they're using the vagina symbol in the doorways of churches, the holy water. So in other words, they suppress your regular sexuality so that if you don't have it, you'll identify with it in the Virgin Mary. See, because you're gonna, you want it, you can't suppress it.
Sure.
So you'll project it in the way that they want you to project.
Yeah.
You're a repressed person, and the repressed person is under control.
Oh, my.
You know, the... Where was it? It said here that in Alexandria, Ahmed Osman, the great Egyptian scholar, he said that in Alexandria, the bishop Theophilus, he was the first bishop of Alexandria, one of the first Christian bishops ever. In fact, I don't know if you know this, but Christianity grew up in Egypt.
The Coptic version?
Yeah. Well, in Alexandria.
Okay,
the first form of Christianity actually was an Egyptian religion. People who've listened to Jordan Maxwell will know that. In Alexandria, Bishop Theophilus was an ambitious was as ambitious as the emperor, Theodosius the First, who had appointed him. It was one of his zealous actions that led to the burning of an estimated 500,000 books stored in the Alexandrian library. Theophilus of Alexandria, this is in 385 to 412 AD, was one of the Orthodox leaders who represented the imperial government dispatched from Rome to impose official orthodoxy on the Alexandrian church. So in other words, Christianity arose out of the destruction of knowledge. Not just at Alexandria, but at other places as well. In the Emerald Tablets, a book by Dennis William Hawk, he said that Pope Gregory declared that all education originated with the devil and then even outlawed the reading of the Bible by laymen. This guy was so fanatical, even the Bible was not to be read. Just possessing a copy of the Bible in the vernacular translation was grounds for the death penalty. Schools, well, isn't it now you can be arrested for quoting the Constitution in the courts in America?
Really?
You damn right better believe it. Schools and centers for learning were closed, and works of art and imagination were especially frowned upon. Hundreds of beautiful temples were leveled to the ground, and monks were assigned to defile the ground with their excrement and prevent anyone from rebuilding. Okay, this is how fanatical it can become. So we're doing good, okay. You know, the world has already seen worse. Gregory, Helen Ellerby, in The Dark Side of Christian History, she says something incredible. Gregory the Great, talking again about the same Gregory, condemned education for all but the clergy as folly and wickedness. So, I mean, they don't mind if it's for a few of their insiders. He forbade laymen to read the Bible. He had the library of the Palatine Apollo burned. And he said, lest its secular literature distract the faithful from contemplation on heaven. So we can't have books. We can't have learning, but we can have faith, and we can have belief, and we can have blind obedience. She goes on to say that after Christians had spent years destroying books and libraries, St. John Chrysostom, the preeminent Greek father of the church, proudly declared, and this is a quote, every trace of the old philosophy and literature of the ancient world has vanished from the face of the earth. You know that I work a lot on writing about the Druids and the loss of the Druidic colleges, and people just cross their arms and go, what Druidic colleges? Okay, let me quote this again then, just in case you didn't get it. Every trace of the old philosophy and literature of the ancient world has vanished from the face of the earth. That is what I mean. They're proud of it.
Amazing.
They did it. They unleashed the hordes. Christians tore Hypatia to pieces, a woman who said, think for yourself, the Alexandrian prophetess. It was a Christian group that burned the Romans first and the Christians. And if you follow my work on Atonism, you'll know there's no difference between the two. The Atonists, right? The Christians burned the Library of Alexandria. That's right. This thing that we know as Christianity, this cult, couldn't survive if there was the old philosophies.
Sure.
Of the Druidic shamanic way that says all men must know selfhood. That if you're going to come to our round tables, and if you're going to come to be a key part of society, we don't want you to be a faceless, soulless minion, you know, dribbling nonsense. We want you to be a completely sane, rational, enlightened, focused, naturally empowered person. Forget about heaven, study nature. It's in front of the universal force is already put before you your greatest textbook. How can you be blind to that and then tell me you've got sanity? How can you abstract into your own mind, like the Eastern guys are trying to tell you to do, you see? How can you abstract from the world and think that it's evil when you were born into it in the first place?
Yeah.
Look at the contradictory, you know, type of stuff that's going on here.
Yeah, yeah.
There's, if I may, there's one incredible quote that I think comes from the same book, The Dark Side of Christian History. It says, technology disappeared as the church became the most cohesive power in Western society. Look at that. Technology disappeared. The extensive aqueducts and plumbing systems vanished. Orthodox Christians taught that all aspects of the flesh should be reviled and therefore discouraged washing as much as possible. They discouraged washing as much as possible. Disease became commonplace as sanitation and hygiene deteriorated. For hundreds of years, towns and villages were decimated by epidemics. Huh. Roman central heating was also abandoned. So here we've got this... remember I said there's no progress?
Yeah, yeah.
Because the world is not important. Now the thing has become morbid, necrotic.
Oh my. Like, I'm thinking about the... You know, as we said earlier, the... about the flesh, you know, I don't know if this is true, but you got those images, you know, of course, of the, you know, monks bashing themselves, you know, sitting with a, you know, stick, you know, beating their own
flagellation.
Back or whatever. Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And the whole idea that you even need to come to confession to tell some other geezer what you've been doing during the week. To gain forgiveness. You know, what is that all, what's that all about? You don't take responsibility for your own actions? But see, this is exactly the kind of thing then that leads to the torture and massacre of others. If we go, if we look at the actual Inquisition details, it, there's a couple of quotes. It says, there's one here at, from the book The Death of Classical Paganism, in which the quote says, with regards to trees and rocks and springs, wherever ignorant people put lights or make other observances, we give notice to everyone that this is a most evil practice. And wherever they are found, they are to be taken away and destroyed. Right? So there's, remember, you're not only defending what you've got, but you're attacking what they've got.
Yeah.
There's a quote from the Encyclopedia of Witchcraft and Demonology. It says, Germany is almost entirely occupied with building fires for the witches. Switzerland has been compelled to wipe out many of her villages on this account. Travelers in Lorraine may see thousands and thousands of stakes to which witches have been bound. It's a worldwide hysteria, you see. Father Cornelius Luce in 1592. Wretched creatures are compelled in the severity of the torture to confess things they have never done. And so by the cruel butchery, innocent lives have been taken. And by a new alchemy, gold and silver are coined from human blood.
Oh my.
He's talking about the taking of the land and the assets of people who are innocent, but have been, you know, condemned. One anecdote... which was a witnessed, an eyewitness account of an Inquisition torture about a woman who was stripped naked by the executioner, shaved off all her body hair in order to seek the hidden places of the body, the sign which the devil imprinted on his cohorts. Warts, freckles, and birthmarks were considered certain tokens of amorous relationships with the devil, you see. In the Woman's Encyclopedia of Myths and Secrets, we read that frequent torture... People had to endure frequent torture. They were kept in prolonged squalor, in darkness of the dungeons, and constantly dragged out to undergo atrocious torment until they could gladly exchange, at any moment, this existence for death, willingly to confess whatever crimes are suggested to them, rather than to be thrust back into the hideous dungeon. You see, now today if we talk about Joseph Mengele, and you know, these it's Nazi torture, everybody cringes. You know, let's get around the fact that it's human torture. It's human violence. You know, it's not just Nazis, Pol Pot, you know, or whatever. It's a worldwide phenomenon. Ellerby says that the horror of the witch hunts knew no bounds. The church had never treated the children of persecuted parents with compassion. But its treatment of witches' children was particularly brutal. Children were liable to be prosecuted and tortured for witchcraft. A famous French magistrate was known to have regretted his leniency when, instead of having young children accused of witchcraft, he had only sentenced them to be flogged while they watched their parents burn. So the children were tortured and burned and killed if their parents were convicted, even if the parents were innocent.
Yeah, like the seed of the, you know, the...
Look at the amount of sadism going on here. A New England minister, he said that chloroform... is a decoy of Satan. apparently offering itself to bless women. But in the end, it will harden society to rob God of the deep, earnest cries which arise in times of trouble. So this guy didn't even want to put them out of their misery. He says, don't give them chloroform. Mm. Yeah. God wants to hear their cries of misery. Would he be saying that if he was the guy sitting there on the torture bench? Francisco, one of the worst, inquisitors there was a man called Francisco Pina in 1578. He says, we must remember that the main purpose of the trial and execution is not to save the soul of the accused, but to achieve the public good and to put fear into others.
You have it.
Right. So if people are looking to a modern parallel, what you see that horror story on TV every night, when you see orchestrated violence or wars in the world, please understand that it's a war on consciousness. Mm. It's designed by people to make you traumatized where you're sitting.
Mm. Yeah.
They're not going to need guns in the street. They're not going to need an Orwellian... like you saw the communists, everybody dressed in the same... You'll be going to them.
Mm. Yeah.
You will be going to them. Yeah. I'm not looking to... See, I never have looked... I will not be looking for them sneaking around with their syringes, and their surveillance. That's just there to make you feel so insecure.
Mm.
They only need to put cameras in the streets and chemtrails. They'll do enough.
Yeah.
They'll do enough, and they'll feed it to you constantly through the scaring. And unfortunately, a lot of people, even in this movement of alternative history and New Age movement, are also buying into this.
Mm. Mm.
And I wish they wouldn't, because they're sending out they're still also sending out the fear vibe.
Yeah.
And the depression vibe and the pessimism vibe. This is wrong, because this is, again, adding to the traumatization of the people.
Mm, mm.
What you need to do is educate the people. But how can you do that unless you're educated yourself?
Mm, yeah, sure.
What is happening is the systematic mind-controlling, Orwellian system that makes you think that tomorrow you're going to be back on the breadline like it was in communist Russia.
Mm.
But remember, what we're forgetting is the communist system didn't work. It was overthrown eventually. And so the forces of B know that.
Yeah.
So it's the old Huxley, Bertrand Russell type that's coming down. And people need to educate themselves on that. Doesn't mean that there's not physical traumas in the world. Of course they are. But those are also designed to send you a message subliminally to your consciousness.
Mm. Mm.
To make you so frightened, so insecure, that you will be going and say, please give me my overalls.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm so traumatized. Doctor, give me some medicine. Look at the rates of medication and pharmaceutical right now.
Yeah, because I'm thinking back to what you said about the cameras, but some of us can look at it and say it makes us insecure, but many people actually want it that way because it's security. It's an evidence that someone's looking out for me, And same way with the medications in a way,
That's right.
And someone's, got their best interest for us, at heart, basically,
All topped off by the fact that we have the biggest delusion that somebody's doing it to us.
Yeah.
Which is the collective consensus thing, There's Daniel Defoe, the Irish writer, who wrote Gulliver's Travels. He had a little poem. He said, bad as he is, the devil may be abused, be falsely charged and causelessly accused. When men, unwilling to be blamed alone, shift off those crimes on him that are their own.
Hmm.
The devil, the nemesis, right?
Hmm.
Remember, the bottom of the pyramid?
Hmm. Yeah.
Do you know how brilliantly the hierarchical structure works? When you realize that the so-called illusion or delusion or phantasmagoria, that there's devils and demons and monsters in the underworld and there's a devil, is the perfect way for man again to escape his responsibility. The devil made me do it.
Mm.
I have no choice. The system did it. What happened when I slept? All of this just came up when you were sleeping.
Yeah.
In fact, I've said in my own work that the problems that America is facing today is because of the very, very smart maneuver of the British Crown to pretend to Americans that they had lost the war.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
Giving the Americans the idea that they won the War of Independence.
Yeah.
And the reason simply was to do with the size of the country. And the small Britain could not police, even with all the mercenaries that it had at its disposal, could never, if it had won the war openly with arms, then it knows that after you win a war, there's rebel action, isn't it? There's guerrilla warfare. Over America, how on earth would the little country of England, with all its power even, policed the rebel action that would have followed in the wake of a victory?
Yeah.
It could have done it for a short time, but then wouldn't it have left its own empire in the East, and England itself, open to attack?
Sure.
The British were too smart for that. So they actually gave the illusion that the war was won by the American War of Independence.
Independence, yeah.
Actually, it wasn't won. They just knew that now that America is going to be having a party, a big frat dance,
sure, yeah,
the fireworks, yeah, we won.
Yep.
That they will now, in the subsequent years, fall asleep, going, we have no enemy, we're our own people, we've defeated the Goliath.
Yeah.
Let's all just make millions, go to sleep, and we don't have to bother with it. And that's exactly what they wanted. In the beginning of the movie, James Bond with Russia from Love, what do you see? The all-intelligent Spectre, right, the leader of Spectre, is showing you two fish. Actually, there's three fish, but they're in the fish tank. And the Spectre guy is happily, quietly stroking his white cat and telling you how the one fish is waiting for the other two fish to fight. And when those two fish have exhausted themselves, Spectre moves in.
Yeah.
And he goes, we have to be... And he condescendingly says, they're so admirable, these creatures.
Yeah.
We have to admire them. Yeah, America and Russia. Let them fight. And when they're both exhausted or one has killed the other, then we move in. Well, ladies, let me tell you something. That's exactly what's been going on. America has now become glutted, exhausted by its own decadence. So much corruption, so much lies, so much apathy, that they can't even police their own borders. They can police you, right? With cameras in New York City.
Yeah, sure. And hordes of policemen,
everywhere.
Yeah.
More and more and more in L.A. I mean, there's almost like the whole police force in L.A. is under investigation. But the thing is that, they can do all of that. They can certainly police you for jaywalking or, not having the right driving license or whatever.
Sure.
But they can't police the borders. So what is happening is that now there comes a phase in which there's a necrotic cycle, a catabolic cycle. And the forces that are predatory in this world that people don't know exist, which is just so wonderful that people don't know that there is an Illuminati, these forces exist. But these forces exist because they've understood human consciousness. And they know how to work human consciousness. They know how to play on your fears. They know that you're just deeply traumatized from a few thousand years back. And therefore, they only have to wave a few shadows in front of you and a few big monsters, and you will immediately fall to pieces. And they will quell and destroy any voice that tries to tell you the opposite. But they'll promote anyone who also feeds that trauma, even if those people appear to be on paper against them. That's not what they're concerned about. They're not concerned as whether you think, you're fighting the Illuminati or you're... All they care about is whether or not you are helping to engender trauma. Then they leave you alone. Then you're actually serving them. You see how it works?
Yeah. That's very interesting. How many aren't, contributing to that?
And how many are contributing to that?
Yeah.
Thinking they're doing good. Well,
yeah,
many.
Of course,
many.
Yeah, of course.
It's not just Van Imp and, these screaming evangelists screaming about the end of the world and the rapture and the devil's going to come and get you, and all the panic. Screaming blue murder.
Sure.
Unfortunately, people who should know better, and this is why I always talk about that that these subjects are occult in nature, and I mean that in a very sacred way, so that people who are not matriculated, even though they mean well and they're doing good work, to a certain extent, if they're not fully empowered into some of the more metaphysical, understandings of human consciousness, they're in jeopardy. First of all, that the ground they may be standing on is weak. You know what I mean? Or that they may be, in fact, causing more problems by thinking that they're actually helping in many ways. So a teacher can never exude any kind of worry, panic. You can address a problem. You can point it out. You can say, here, this obscenity exists. But you're meant to engender, empowerment in people. Because any mind... Any problem that the mind of man can create, the mind of man can solve. We are also historically at a very important time in which the problems that we're facing are really challenges. They're really discoveries. We're going to discover about ourselves. Mankind may be going through this catabolic cycle in very much the way the seasons go through the winter cycle. We may be at a point in which we are learning, going to learn, because we haven't learned it from free will, so nature is now going to teach us some of the most precious lessons. Well, we should be in happiness and expectation about that. To find out, throw more doors open. Yes, we have a force against that that wants to keep the doors closed and doesn't want...
It seems to be a preparation for that also, if you actually look around and see, in so many different ways. Either if it's, as you say, earth changes or whatever, we have preparations for that. all over the place, doomsday vaults, you know, as we talked about and stuff like that. But also, again, then we can tie it back to that we have the all the surveillance going in, the potential, you know, microshipping of people, you know, control on every level now, not even then only the, you know, physical or psychological, all of them, you know, cover them all. And that's, in a way, then I have to say that, okay, that's an encouraging sign then, that there actually is more fear, as you say, if this is a historical important time, and there are hints of this in our surrounding, that then that is a good sign. That's a positive mm-hmm. thing that we can, you know, take with us and take aboard, so to speak, and yep. actually use that, you know, to our own empowerment and think that, okay, this is a good time, a good opportunity for, you know, hopefully some kind of a spiritual leap or whatever in humanity or something like that.
That's right. At the any time there's a massive sea change going to take place, there is a struggle. And the forces of darkness or the forces of ignorance will move because they're threatened.
Yeah,
they're actually worried. They know other things about the movement of these, you know, astrological ages and what have you.
Yeah,
and that's a big deal with them. And if they know that some big phase shift is taking place, that's why they will openly act more.
Mm.
Do you remember Yuri Lina had taken photographs of it? I mean, in London, people can go and see it. The main Masonic lodge. Right above the door is the symbol of the net over the earth.
That's right.
Just like the United Nations symbols, but exactly in this one, it's a physical net.
Mm-hmm.
That's that net that they want to draw in to keep everybody clustered, everybody the same. And people want that sort of collective emotional security. People are very primitive psychologically and emotionally. And therefore, they're susceptible to this kind of reining in.
Mm-hmm.
But what we also got to realize is that that net starts to tighten when they realize that people are starting to ask deeper questions.
Mm.
And I am, for one, a real believer that people are now awakening more.
Mm.
There is literature, there's the internet, you know, so people are asking questions, they're seeking, and they're a little bit getting jaded and tired of this status quo that's been provided by our masters, because it's limited. I even believe that the sort of, you know, resurrection of all of this Christianity in the world is a short-lived phenomenon.
Mm.
It's also a reaction.
Mm-hmm.
It died a death, and now it's come back. And it's only going to, again, pacify some nightmare fears for a very short time until, again, it will fade and people will go, you know, this is not handling my problems.
Mm.
I thought Jesus was going to do it and the pastor will do it. And for a while, they'll bask in the light of all that stuff, as they are doing now.
Mm.
But you see, again, that's short-lived. I don't predict it lasting more than 2.5 years. Mm. You come back 2.5 years from now, I will predict that this big evangelic zeal is going to be far less impactive than it is now.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah, it's a trauma soothing pacification, right? A bromide, but it's not going to help people. It's not.
Hmm.
Even people who are now like really into it, real fixated, they think they found their little satori.
Sure.
I'm predicting that even those people who are like really into it right now, who think this is really, I'm glad they've come back to all of this, are going to find very soon that it isn't helping them in their marriages and in their life, and in their own inner crisis. You see, because it won't happen. It won't. It doesn't. Not unless you turn off all reason.
Hmm.
So the human being who is centered realizes that there are no problems in life. There's only challenges. There's only more self-discovery.
Mm.
There's an ongoing process, let's say, that's very mutable and very creative and very dynamic. Would you join these cults and you become dominated by these psychopaths and you become psychotic yourself in this way, then you're becoming fixed.
Yeah.
You know, you're becoming immovable.
Yeah.
But you only do that when you're afraid, when you're traumatized. Haven't you seen a deer in the headlights?
Yeah.
It freezes. It's free because of trauma.
Mm.
And we are being traumatized by the news and by so many other things right now.
Mm.
We're traumatized even by people. You must start to learn that people at work, people around you, as soon as they even mention or bring up in conversation something that's sort of fear-based or paranoia-based, you've got to block that. You don't have to address it. You don't have to say anything out loud. But you've got to go, that's your reality. That's not my reality.
Mm.
You're going to have to defend your sovereignty from those people who go, oh, my goodness, you know, I'm so scared. I'm so frightened. Things are really crazy. You know, you've got to sort of say, well, I'm sorry for you that's your reality.
Yeah.
But don't infect me with that.
Hmm.
I'm in my center. Everything is fine. I'm acting the way I need to. I'm being guided. And I am not insecure.
I mean, don't let that in, you mean? Or
don't let it in.
Yeah.
Absolutely do not let it in. Cancel it. Hmm. Intellectually. Cancel it, because it's an energy that if you hypnotists know this.
Sure.
and therefore can infect you. It can infect you.
And this can get really bad, maybe in the years ahead. You know, more trauma, more, you know, whatever, earthquakes, global warming. Here we come, world war. You know, whatever.
Right. And my my message to people using as 9/11 as one of the best examples is, you know, okay, it may have shaken you up, you know, but did it wake you up? You know, because they're going to throw more at you.
Yeah.
And maybe they should. Maybe it needs to happen, because the main question here is not that it just shook you up so that tomorrow you can roll over and go to sleep and go back to your little, you know, your little dream.
Yeah.
Did it wake you up? And if it woke you up, then that's great.
That's very good. Yeah, exactly. This is, again, what I said earlier. This is a tremendous timing before, and an opportunity for so many people to wake up, actually, when they are being threatened, I guess. I mean, it's an awful way to have to go down that road, but maybe it's necessary because we have become so lost in where we are, you know, currently heading, you know.
Sophocles said it, I don't know how many thousands of years ago, that nothing great enters the life of mortals without a curse. You know, nothing great enters the life of mortals without a curse. But through that curse, through that friction, through that clash, which is a vital clash, which is ever ongoing in life, that is what the great is. The great comes from that. It comes from this examination. And as I say, it's always rooted in a person's understanding of their own self. The Christian movement has worked so heavily on causing fragmentation within your own self, between you and your body. It's, you know, there's another quote from an Augustinian, actually, from an Augustinian priest in Poland. He said, "Follow our Lord's example and hate your body. If you love it, strive to lose it, says the Holy Scripture, in order to save it. If you wish to make peace with it, always go armed. Always wage war against it. Treat it like a slave, or soon you yourself will be its unhappy slave." Look at the kind of psychotic mind that would imagine that your body is your slave, is your enemy. You see, and a person who embodies that becomes, you know, a despot. They're already a despot, meaning a tyrant within themselves. That individual, I am telling you that even though it's not obvious the process of how this happens, although if you studied Jung and Freud, it should be obvious, or Wilhelm Reich, particularly because he talks about very much how the mind affects the body, and then the body affects the world, your behavior, you see. So to psychologists, it's no mystery at all. But to ordinary people, it is a mystery of how your thinking creates reality. So your predicament, your scenario, your situation, and the world, because the world is all people. One is personal and one is collective. And when people are telling you to take away the responsibility, because now it's the Pope's responsibility, or the priest's responsibility, or God's responsibility, he'll take care of it. This is one of the most critical problems. And now we've had 2,000 years to study that and find out that what I'm saying is true. We're at the point now where we can be grown up enough to accept that and look for something, you know, a different way. Not a religion of, you know, another herd, a collectivized thing, but a truly, you know, free situation.
Yeah.
Because to me, freedom and love are two words for the same thing. And where you do not see freedom, you do not have love. Make that 100% granite. Where there is no freedom, there is no love. So stop deluding yourself. Now, people may love what freedom gets them, but they may not love freedom. Or I have put it on my forum in another way. I said that freedom from freedom is not freedom. So what we have today, Henrik, in the world is many, many people who really do want to be free. Only trouble is they want to be free from freedom.
Very interesting, yeah.
And Big Brother, he's happy to hear that, because he's dressing up and he's making phone calls and he's going, "Get with it, guys. They want to be free from freedom."
Yeah.
You know, so they're up 24 hours typing away, making their new world order.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they're busy. They can't wait to bring you what you want.
Yeah.
So when I see the slave-master relationship, I am fascinated by the actions of the master, but I am infinitely more interested in the slave's mentality.
Yeah, the persons who accept that.
What's your game? What's your gig? What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
That you have imprisoned your own mind.
Yeah.
This is what my particular focus is on.
Yeah, scared of the potential freedom there's there. But again, I hear what you're saying there with the center, because that must be it. That must be the, you know, the main problem, because if you don't have that center, you're always gonna search for the security on the outside, yeah, somewhere, you know,
the scaffolding.
External, yeah.
Right. If an old building is falling down, don't you need the scaffolding?
Yeah.
If a teeth is rotten, don't you put the brace on it? If a person's legs are weak, don't they get crutches? Didn't Salvador Dali, you know, those incredible paintings where he shows these big heads popped up by the crutch?
Mm.
He knew all about it. Psychological insecurity requires crutches. And today we have many crutches, and the manufacturer of the crutches is not to be blamed. You cannot blame the crutch. Blame your own crippledness. If you're psychically crippled, if you're emotionally mutilated, don't blame, see, Big Brother, quote-unquote, from coming in to strengthen you, you know, that you have now the external forms of control.
Yeah.
Because you have none within. Psychically sovereign, you have no sovereignty, then don't expect any social sovereignty. I've said this till I'm blue in the face, and I hope people are listening, because if you don't have the inner sovereignty and the inner immunity, do not expect it externally, and do not expect it, you know, to be given to you by anybody else. What they'll give you is control. They'll give you power. They will enforce, they will infuse police states, all of those things. When I see those things, I am not concerned. I see those as a symptom, not a cause.
Exactly, and in a way, that's the main idea, I think, to be aware of them and observing them. But I mean, for people who want to go out and, you know, fight it, whatever. Oh, okay, good luck with that. That's currently not my take on it, anyway. You know, to actually go out there with arms or, you know, guns or whatever it is. I don't know, but observing it and getting the feeling that, okay, this is a sign that something actually is at least occurring, something is happening, something is changing, and, you know.
Well, remember, it's very, very empowering for a person to project an external nemesis and then go out and with muscular skill, not psychological skill, but some sort of political, you see, action. It feels very good, erotically, sensationally, sensually, to win in those kinds of battles. It just has a particular, you know, sensational appeal. Just like any sport does, you see, or mastering...
Another thrill, basically.
Another thrill. Yeah. It's a very, very powerful thrill.
Yeah.
And man is always looking for that thrill. Don't you see that if we really step back from the canvas, what would be if we have already... What would it be if we have created all of these monsters? And we've created the fight itself. And then we create the armor and the sword to go and do the fighting. What happens if we're caught in that loop, where we manufacture the problem? And the Course in Miracles has gone into this. If anyone's familiar with that book, the Course in Miracles will always say that why do you manifest a problem when there isn't one? You know, I'm paraphrasing, but the gist of this is, don't look at the external problem, look at why you imagine there is a problem. Look at why you're motivated. Look at how you're motivated, you see. Look at how you now, your energy is going towards a fix it. You know, in this very active masculine kind of way. But it's a different kind of mentality to ask, where did the problem come from? And why am I reacting in panic or whatever? I would sort of modify it and say this, that in many times in life, and we've had discussions like this on the forum, that in answer to certain people's questions, that look, in life, there's two realities. There's what is done, and there's the way that it is done, and also the why. So most people have trained themselves to see the what that is going on. But most people need to further train themselves and understand why a thing happens, the motive, in other words, the motive, and also the way in which it is done. The way in which it is done. So, If George Bush or Blair or anybody saying what we want is social order and peace and harmony, no more battles and fights, that sounds good. That's the what. That sounds lovely on paper. That looks great. No more war. I'm all for it.
Sure.
And so what we've got to understand is that the mass of people go, and vote the guy in are voting for the what. But if only those people were more savvy to say, but what's about the way? You know, you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. You can't cut the limb of the tree on which you're sitting and call it sanity. So you're pruning the tree, but you're cutting off the, you know, the branch on which we sit. Meaning you're hundreds of years now, hundreds of years legally and hundreds of years in economy are being put back. Do you know that? What's happening in the last couple of years is arresting us. In American context, it's throwing people back hundreds of years.
Of course.
Taking away incredible liberties and freedoms. You see? So what about the way that something is being done? The what we can understand. Immigrants want to come and have a new home in the, in the, in another country. Absolutely, I can understand that. That's the what. But the way and the why are two different things. A person killed another human being. The what, we under, maybe I can understand that. But what's the motive? Why did they do that? And what about the way that they executed their desires? You see? Now, this is where the psychology comes in, because the what you can see with your senses, Henrik, but the way is only a form of clairvoyance. Because even if you ask the person, why did you do this, you can never be sure they're going to tell you. And they may not know. And they may lie. So don't you see now that this is where a great problem exists in human nature? That human nature has got so far as to be able to basically recognize the what of a thing. But the clairvoyance or the intuition or some other kind of quality of observation, except in very, very, very few people, is mostly lacking in the world of how to really know the why. We're very in a, we're almost in like a sort of a desert when it comes to this. We're in a wilderness of the whys and also the way that things are done. This is what is most disturbing. In fact, you know, if people find this hard to understand, just think back to any violation that's ever happened to you from any friend or anybody that's done you wrong. And I'm not saying they haven't done you wrong. That's the what. Right? The what is a factual thing. Somebody totally did something wrong to you. Now examine whether it was the what that caused you the great trauma or the pain, or the way that they did it. And you'll see what I'm talking about. That needs to be meditated on. So I'll leave people with that. And concentrate on that in a, more of a social context as well. Because the what may be understood. Oh, we want to stop famine in the world, so we have to have the World Bank. We just have to, you know, have the Red Cross, and we just have to have all of these organizations and the Bank of International Settlements. And, you know, we really, really need United Nations and a global police force. And we need one money system, because then it'll be make your banking so much easier. And we just want to take away all the trouble in your life, you know, all the all the things that make your life difficult. You know, that's what we're all about. We're, we're going to have fingerprinting and all of these kinds of things. But you're going to want it, you're wanting it. If people don't stand up and actively say, no, we don't want that. Thank you very much, but no thanks. We don't want it. Do you know that in Florida, it did take them 4 years, but the tomato pickers went on strike against Taco Bell. And even though it took 4 years, they absolutely won hands down. They completely had that company on its knees. Because people always come back and go, well, it's very hard to win those kinds of things. Actually, no, it's not. It's just that people don't endure long enough. And then, of course, when they do win, you never hear about it in the media. If the coal miners in the 1970s had hung out just a little bit longer against Thatcher, they would have won. If the people who, you know, fought the Hormel company in Minnesota had hung out longer, they would have won. People have incredible power. That Florida incident shows you that this entire corporation that told them to go and suck for 4 years turned coat. They ended up having to do it because the people just wouldn't go back to work. And they wouldn't pick the tomatoes, and that company turned around, this corporate giant, and was begging them in the end. It won. It, and the, all the concessions of these tomato pickers was granted.
And that's the most dangerous thing you can, you know, well, communicate to people. You know,
most people haven't heard about this. But they need to get in and look it up on the internet, the Taco Bell, you know, court case, the tomato pickers, and find out what incredible victory that was. And so I say that when people, ever, if they really do concertedly, nobody's forcing anybody to go to work, nobody's forcing people to buy certain products, nobody's forcing anyone to, you know, go to these corporations and work for them and champion them. And if anyone stood up, whether it was to not pay taxes for a while or not to, you know, get the petrol for a while, if they really concertedly did it, people have no understanding of their own power. I've got quotes from the boys, the top of the establishment, telling you that we've got to prevent people getting together. Because they're lethal if those people should ever, you know, have a, one brain, one mind, and come together in any way. The reason why there's no change in the world is not because some dark, evil force is working on you, as much as nobody has any coherence anymore. Everybody's factions. Look at how many factions exist, you see, and fragments in society today. not only the basic ones, but so many more. Nobody can agree to get one thing done.
Mm. Isn't that interesting? With the lack of individuality, you can't cooperate at all. Right. In a way. Maybe, yeah, it's interesting.
Well, you know, this is why in the end, as Bogreitz once said, you know, in the end, it's all only the reason why the human family will put down all of these differences is when it realizes that it's been shot at by a common enemy.
Mm.
And hopefully that will then turn people around. But, you know, there's other psychological components in all of this. And people need to become very aware of how thought creates reality.
Mm.
And realize that is in you. You can change at any given moment of the day or night. You have the power to change your own thinking.
Yeah.
That's all you have the rights over. You don't have any political right. I'll tell you that right now. You can do a little bit here and there on the social level if you feel like it.
Mm.
But never think for a moment that your action politically is going to really make any major changes in the world. The only thing that you can do that has any true and fundamental power, staying power, lasting power, any true metaphysical, spiritual meaning, is to change yourself and your own thinking patterns. That's it. Bottom line.
Something to think about and meditate on.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's a great way to end it for now this time, Michael. This has been, again, a very, very good interview and, you know, nice to get all that information. I recommend, you know, lots to think about and lots to go through. I recommend you listen to this at least, you know, twice to get things, you know, really, you know, go through those at the beginning of those quotes again and, you know, getting your head around all this. Absolutely.
Well, we'll put up a lot of, you know, the links through for people to explore this more.
Yes, absolutely.
Because again, don't believe what I'm saying. Investigate it for yourself.
Yeah.
You know, look at something from both sides.
Yeah.
You know, leave these stupid partisan allegiances aside and study a subject, you know, for itself.
Yeah.
To really discover something. If that serves to embolden your beliefs, that's fine. Then at least reason is behind your belief systems.
Yeah.
Or if it tells you, no, I'm going to move on from this. This is no longer serving me. Then that's fine. At least you're making the decision.
Yeah.
You know, where there is doubt, there is freedom.
Before we finish off here today, Michael, tell potential new listeners that don't know about your website, you get a new forum up there. Of course, tell us also about your excellent DVD series that, you know, I recommend highly to people to get, you know, skip a night at the bar or whatever and get yourself one of those DVDs, because that's real good information right there. So,
well, if people are into what we're doing today, then I recommend the divination and the goddess tradition, because that's one that has a lot of solutions in it. It answers that big question that I get a lot from, not just on the forum, but, you know, conferences all over the world. People are saying, what do I do about these problems? And I keep answering in exactly the same way, is that this is not a matter of doing, it's a matter of being. Doing is actually part of your problem. And of course, you get total silence instantly at that point, because they go, what do you mean? Is there a difference? Well, you know, the divination and the goddess, that can be found in Origins and Oracles. I recommend people to get that. To start re-understanding that concept about doing and being, there's a great secret within that, you know, dichotomy right there. The main website is taroscopes.com, michaeltessarian.com. You can go there, and michaeltessarian.com gets people to all the other websites. The new forum is at redeyescreations.com/MSAR forum.
Yeah.
And, you know, people are welcome to come on there and leave their comments. And you know, the motto of the forum is to help us open the eyes of the world.
Yeah.
You know, we gain wisdom, we gain understanding about something, then we can share that. You know, it's no buy and sell. It's just like, here, let's share, you know, what we're seeing, what we're discovering, what our story is.
Yeah.
And people are welcome to come onto the Red Eye site, you know, become subscribers to hear the other interviews. What we're doing with our projects is really exciting. And
absolutely.
You know, people are really getting turned on to that.
Yeah.
Because you know, the concept of the internet radio is a really powerful. I'm a big believer in it, and you know, really believe that people should be, you know, attentive to that and be part of that as much as they can be.
Absolutely. Yeah. Again, Michael, thank you so much for coming on, and looking forward to our next chat very much. So until then, take good care.
Thank you very much.
Don't forget, you can pop a question to a regular or upcoming guest or comment about the show by calling our voicemail, and we might play up your comment or question during the show. This is a great way to communicate, interact, and participate in the program until we have set up our own live streams. You can find all the details, the phone number you should call, and the next upcoming guest in our radio section. So just head on over to redicecreations.com and click on radio on the left-hand side menu, and from there you can read all about it. Red Ice Creations is taking next week off from the news updates and the radio show to work and dive deeper into research for our film projects. So we will be back again on Sunday, the 27th of May. Thank you for listening to the program, and thanks to Fredrik Palmgren for the audio production. This is Henrik Palmgren. Until the 27th, take good care and take it easy.